there is a saying, don't judge a book by its cover. And the implication is that you should not judge a book by the cover, rather by what's written inside, by the text, by the words, by the letters. So today we will find out that you should not judge a book by the text either. When we look at a book, just take any book and open it up, you would say that the book, the content of the book, the main part of the book is the text, the letters. But the letters have to be printed on something. They cannot be suspended in midair. So that's why they need to have a paper that is printed on. So the paper is only a necessary tool for the letters, but paper itself doesn't have much value without the letters. That's how we look at every book, and that's probably correct from our perspective. But when you look at the Torah, the Kabbalah is explaining to us that it's actually the other way around. It says that the letters are black letters on the white parchment of the Torah scroll, and the white parchment is white because it represents the light, the energy, the infinite light of godliness. And the letters are black because they represent the limitations, the channels, the boundaries that the Torah creates for this light in order for this light to come down here. In other words, godly light is infinite, and godly light cannot be contained in this world. If you will look at a source of light which is too strong, you won't be able to see anything, even though light is usually beneficial for people to see things. If you will take a cup and you'll start pouring water there, and then the force with which water will be coming into the cup is going to become too strong, then the cup is going to end up being empty. No water is going to stay in the cup, or it'll even break the cup. If you will plug an electric device into an outlet that provides too strong of electricity for it, it's going to blow up. So every light needs to be contained, every energy needs to be contained, and every energy and every light has to be in sync with the container, with the recipient. And if it's not only it's useless, it actually could be damaging. Too much light could be damaging for people's eyes. So now we understand that godly light is infinite. How can this godly light come into this world? How can this godly light give energy, life force to everything around us? Because everything what we see around us is limited. Not only is it limited, I look a certain way and you look differently. I think a certain way and you think differently. I have a certain body, you have a different body, and so on and so forth. So we are all different. This is because the godly light which is coming into me is different than the godly light which is coming into you. So not only godly light that comes into this world has to be limited, it has to be limited uniquely, tailored to the recipient. And this is why me and you are able to be different, because my life force is tailored to me and your life force is tailored to you. Now, and this is the difference between two people. Imagine the difference between a tree and a human, a stone and an animal. A stone gets lively force from God, an animal gets lively force from God, but they are very different. So now you understand that the white light of godly force that the white parchment represents cannot be contained in this world unless it has limiting restrictions that send it down here in a specific way, to a specific recipient, with a specific force. So letters of the Torah represent this limiting force. And this is why, maybe in the Torah, letters are only consonants. Vowels are not written as letters. Vowels are nikudot, which are written above, below, near a letter. But letters are only consonants. This is because when we speak, the only way to create a constant sound is if we are going to be restricting the flow of air through our mouth. If I am making a vowel sound, my mouth is not restricting the flow of air. My mouth is not creating a channel through which the air is going to flow. But the idea of a letter in Hebrew, according to Kabbalah, is creating a channel. And that's why these channels that are written in the Torah are the channels through which the godly force and godly wisdom are coming into this world. So now we see that according to Judaism, how we look at letters and the material that they're printed on, according to Kabbalah, is totally different than what we are usually used to. We look at paper as just a necessary tool to hold letters, but letters is what counts. So if I would ask you what's more important, the letters or the paper they're printed on, what's higher? What is more necessary, the letters or the paper? You would say for sure letters. The Torah is telling us that the parchment of the Torah scroll is actually higher than the letters, but the letters are needed because without these letters, the parchment would not be able to deliver the light to us. And this is why, according to the Jewish law, when Sefer Torah is written, every letter is supposed to be surrounded by parchment. You cannot have two letters which are touching, and you cannot have a letter at the edge, because every letter is a channel for the parchment. And if it's not surrounded by parchment, it's not serving as this channel. Now, why are we talking about it today? Usually, the process of teaching in Jewish schools, in yeshivas, is through questions and answers. In non-Jewish world, it's called the Socratic method. In ancient Greece, sophists would usually preach, they would give long, elaborate sermons in which they were able to convince people of their ideas. Socrates, as opposed to that, was not just delivering sermons. He was questioning people and leading them to the conclusion he's intending to through questions. And that's why if you are teaching by presenting first questions and then answering them, that's called usually the Socratic method. And it is preferred a lot for practical reasons because this way people understand the material better, people are more engaged, people remember it better, because people become active participants. If you ask them a question, and then they have to think about the answer, and then they're listening to your answer, then they are more involved. They're active participants as opposed to just passive listeners. That's why in today's education system, the Socratic method is used a lot. If you will go to yeshiva, you will see that the Jewish traditional education has always been exactly this way, through questions and answers. And this is because the main book which is studied in yeshiva, Talmud, is all questions and answers and debates and disagreements, various opinions, and so on. That's number one. But number two, even the way how people study Talmud is based on questions and answers, because as you probably know, that they're usually partners, chavruta, that are studying together, and they are arguing all the time. If you walk into a Beit Midrash, a study hall of any yeshiva, you'll see people yelling, screaming, arguing. You'll think that they're about to start a brawl, but they're just simply learning a page of Gemara. That's it, page of Talmud. So first of all, the material that they are learning is based on questions and answers. And second of all, how they're learning this material is also based on questions and answers. And this is how the Jewish traditional education has been since the very beginning. But the reasoning for it is different than the reasoning for using the Socratic method in modern education system. It is true that people are more engaged and people remember better. But we are actually taught in Kabbalah that what is a question? Question is a restriction. If you have a train of thought and then you suddenly have a question about the topic you're deliberating on, so you are stopping. It's a restriction. Or if you have an idea and I am asking you a question about what you just told me, this idea which you presented, then I am trying to restrict your idea or the application of your idea. I'm saying, well, maybe what you are saying is incorrect, or either it's incorrect in certain case or it's incorrect altogether. It's a blockage. It's a restriction. An idea is a flow of thought, and a question which is asked on this idea, when this idea has been questioned, that's a restriction for this idea. Sometimes it's a complete blockage. And sometimes it is narrowing the idea down. Giving a perimeter is a limitation. If I will present any idea to you, the Torah law is telling us that we have to keep Shabbos. We cannot drive on Shabbos. We cannot work on Shabbos. We cannot go to movies on Shabbos. So then you'll start asking me questions. Your questions could be either, one second, what if there is a medical emergency? Are you allowed to violate Shabbos in order to help someone with his health? Then I will tell you, you are correct. You are right for asking this question, because whenever there is a danger for someone's health or for someone's life, we are not only allowed to, we are obligated to violate Shabbos. So now your question created a limitation on a more general statement that I made earlier. Or your question could be, one second, when the Torah was given, there was no movies, there was no cars. So how can you say that God told us in the Torah that we cannot drive a car or go to a movie on Shabbos, because Moses at Mount Sinai for sure did not hear these instructions from God? So this is going to be a question, by the way, this is like, I think, one of the most popular questions I get. So this is going to be a question that is going to at least try to create a complete blockage of the flow of this idea. This question is going to try to undermine the entire thought process, the entire premise. So either way, in one way or another, question is limiting, either stopping completely or creating limiting parameters, but it's limiting. That's the idea of a question. So now we come up with answers. What are going to be the answers? Answers, in the first case, an answer will be, well, you are correct. We have to keep Shabbos, with the exception of situations when people need help with their health issues. So I have now continued the flow of my thought, but within narrower parameters, which are created by your question. Or there's another way. What happens when people ask me, Rabbi, how can you say that you cannot drive cars on Shabbos or you cannot go to movies on Shabbos when the Torah was given, there was no cars or movies, so Moses could have not possibly heard it from God? This question was intending to completely undermine the basic premise of my idea of keeping Shabbos today. So my response would be that it's true that there was no cars, but there was fire, and that's why engines that work with igniting fires, like a regular combustion engine that we have today, are not described in the Torah as engines of a car, but they are described as lighting fire. That's why you cannot say that Torah does not speak about cars. So now I had a question that was trying to stop the flow of my thought completely, and I overcame this blockage, and now we are continuing talking about Shabbos. So in other words, if we are learning using this what's called Socratic method, which means asking questions and giving answers, then the entire learning process is based on either overcoming blockages or funneling the thought through a narrower path because of the questions. Now we understand the difference between a process of learning where people just deliver information without any obstacles, and the process of learning where people ask questions and receive answers. The first method of just speaking freely is bringing down the light without any obstacles. It's just a flow of light, flow of information. The second method, which is called the Socratic method, is bringing light, which is going to be obstructed by the questions. And then you overcome this obstruction and you move on. So question is a limiting factor. Information is the light, which is either funneled through or overcoming this obstacle. So now we understand from Kabbalistic perspective why the education in yeshivas is specifically built through questions and answers. And we can understand it by looking at the metaphor of letters and parchment of the Torah. God can spill his light into this world. God could give this energy to the world. But what's going to happen? This world won't be able to have its physical existence, and this light would not be able to have anything to hang on to in this world. This light will just overwhelm this world. In order for this light to be able to be absorbed by this world, it has to be limited by the letters. It has to be contained. It has to be partially concealed. And then the letters make sure that godly energy is delivered to you the way you need it and to me the way I need it. Same thing is with the flow of information in the Torah. God could have delivered his wisdom just as a free-flowing sermon without any obstacles. It would be wonderful. But this information would not have anything to hang on to in this world. It would not be enclosed into the material aspects of this world. The questions that people ask are making sure that this information, which is in the Torah, is going to be grasped in this world. Why? Because when people ask questions, they ask questions for two reasons. Either because they want to make sure that their material mind, their materialistic brain, understands what the Torah is saying, or because they are seeking a practical application of what the Torah is saying. Either way, this information is getting a materialistic container, a physical container. Either it's getting enclosed into people's brain, or it's getting enclosed in the practical idea that people asked about when they were concerned about the application of this thought. So in other words, when we look at the Torah scroll, we see that godly light is unlimited, and that's the parchment. And the letters are what allowing this godly light to come down into this world in a way that it will be able to be absorbed and used by the world. And same thing when we learn the Torah. God could have given us his wisdom by just providing the information. But then this information would not have any, or would not have so much, physical implementation, would not have so many physical applications. The wisdom of the Torah would not be enclosed in the material world. And that's why questions are making sure that the Torah is going to have practical application, that the wisdom of Torah, godly wisdom, is going to be brought down into the physical world. Now, there's one more detail here. Questions and answers is the standard way of learning Talmud, Jewish law, and all Jewish books which are pertaining to that part of the Torah studied this way. In Kabbalah, there's no debate, there's no questions and answers. Why? Because Kabbalah is the godly wisdom which is coming to us unobstructed. It is a spiritual teaching. That's why Kabbalah is so aloof, and that's why some people see it as something intangible. It's not coming down into this world enclosed. And that's why there's no debates, that's why there's no arguments, and there's no questions there. It's Lag BaOmer, which is considered to be the new year of Kabbalah. So that explains how the books of Kabbalah are written, and that whole part of the Torah is being taught differently. There are two parts of the Torah. One is called the body of the Torah, one is called the soul of the Torah. And the body of the Torah is talking to our bodies, and soul of the Torah is talking to our souls. The body of the Torah is Talmud, Shulchan Aruch, the Jewish law, Mishnah, Gemara, all of these parts of the Torah that talk to our bodies. Why? Because they tell us what to do. They tell, when the Torah is telling you to put on tefillin, the Torah is talking to your body. You have to put on tefillin with your body. You cannot put on tefillin with your soul. When Torah tells you to eat kosher, your actual physical mouth has to eat specific foods. So Talmud, Gemara, Mishnah, Shulchan Aruch, all of these parts of the Torah talk to our bodies, and this is the body of the Torah. There is also, just like we have a soul, there's also Torah's soul. And Torah's soul is Kabbalah. And Kabbalah is the teaching that is talking to our souls. And it's more spiritual, it's more aloof, more removed from physicality. And we just now also understood why it is that there's no debates or questions there, because it is removed from physicality, and that's why it's taught in a way that it's not enclosed fully into the material world, and there's no questions there. So Kabbalah is talking to our souls. And a fire in the Torah, in Jewish tradition, has always been a metaphor for our souls. That's why we light the Yahrzeit candle when we commemorate someone who has passed. Soul is compared to a fire, And when we are celebrating the new year of Kabbalah, we light bonfires, because fire is the only resemblance of our souls that we can think of in a physical world. The Kabbalah is explaining that a soul, just like a flame, is on one hand connected to a wick, which is down below, but then it always strives up, strives higher. Our souls are also connected to our physical bodies, but they always want to go up, want to go higher. And just like a flame is always flickering, our souls are never at peace. They're always moving. Our body wants to be at rest. If you do not have a reason to get out from your bed in the morning, you won't get out from your bed in the morning, because body wants to rest. That's what body does. Body wants comfort. Body does not want to exert itself. But a soul, on the contrary, is always trying to move. It's always striving somewhere. It's always wants to achieve something. That's why it's compared to fire that is always flickering and is always trying to go up.